Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for June 30th, 2011. Well, one of the things I like about attending the Write Canada Writers Conference each year is the chance to score free books. The organizers usually have an eclectic collection of books that have come into their possession, and they decide that they're going to give away. Well, this year was no different. I was able to find a little gem called Historical Attitudes That Have Shaped the Church's Use of the Arts by Matthew R. S. Todd. Well, I haven't finished the book yet. A couple of comments in the first chapter made me think again about why the arts have had such a difficult time finding acceptance in churches as a whole. Looking at the history of the early church, Todd writes about how Plato's philosophies began gaining ground in the church. Quote, "This was bound to have a negative impact on the church's attitudes toward the arts, as Plato had a negative view of the cognitive aspect of art. Plato considered imagining as the most superficial form of mental activity and the lowest form of knowing subject to illusion. Images fashioned by the artist and poet were therefore considered to be deceptive and removed from reality." End quote. So, has this attitude changed? I'm going to keep reading the book to see, and if you have an opinion just on this particular perspective, feel free to drop me an email and share it to share on the air. Keep listening, and I'll give you the email address at the end of today's show. That was Table Scrap Dog from guitarist Jay Calder's Breakfast CD, Breakfast with Barnabas. Known as Canada's Phil Kagi, I heard the Placeville guitarist at the Couples Night Out event last winter and fell in love with his guitar stylings. Well, when most of us look at stone, we see something that needs to be moved. When Cambridge area sculptor Heidi Brannan looks at stone, she's moved to see something. Describing herself as someone who brings order to chaos, we're going to find out exactly what that means in our conversation with her. Good evening, Heidi.
Good evening, Robert.
Now, when did you first get to that point where you called yourself an artist?
That was a hard decision, actually. I would say from a pretty young age, I knew I was driven to pursue the fine arts, but to actually label myself like that took a bit of a leap.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of a tipping point when I realized I just could no longer help myself and that this is something I was just called to do.
And what when you did that and when you said that I mean, I've been to writers' conferences, and that's sort of the point of no return almost, because all of a sudden they've been writing for years and years, and now all of a sudden they realize that they are a writer. Mm-hmm. And they finally get to that point and say, I am a writer. Yeah. What was it like when you finally got to the point where you said, I am an artist?
Yeah, well, like you said, it is a bit of a commitment. I think it was, in one sense, kind of scary, and in another sense, relieving. It gave me permission to really do what I wanted to do.
Now, what were the type of things you were doing artistically at that time?
Well, earlier on, I was doing a lot of things that other people wanted me to do that initially I wasn't as excited about. But, you know, when you're kind of young, it, you know, it's good for the ego. And after a while, that fades. Mm-hmm. So that just didn't matter anymore. But a lot of drawing and painting and just pretty much realism. So after a while, I kind of settled more on a stylistic language that was more honest.
Mm-hmm.
And just fit more with who I was and didn't care as much about what other people were interested in.
And that again, is sort of a tipping point as well, when you get to the point where you say, I know how I want to express myself creatively, and I'm going to do it whether other people like it or even whether other people buy it. Was that a difficult choice for you to make, though, to get to that point and say, I'm going to do what the art that I want to do?
Yeah, it was a journey of discovery. I had to really reconcile myself with the fact that creating like this has value intrinsically because it's a language unto itself, and it didn't need to be about sell it. And once I got past that, there was a lot more passion to my work, and it just held more meaning, and that's when it started to sell. So it's kind of backwards, but that's the way it worked.
Yeah. When you got to that point, when did you begin? I'm assuming that sculpting became part of that journey. When did you begin sculpting?
Back in high school, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what attracts you to that? What keeps you wanting to do that form?
You know, while all my other creative friends were busy painting, I always had to walk around something and get inside of it. You know, 3D just was the sort of expression I kept returning to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, in the earlier years, it was harder for me to settle on a medium, but anything that I could mold or shape or construct and build really was more interesting to me. And so, you know, you start out with stuff like plaster. That's really fairly easy to work with. And wood, but I have to say wood never really held my attention in the same way. It was frustrating for me. I didn't like the grain. And then eventually I did try soapstone, being as one of the softest stones out there.
Mm-hmm.
And finally thought, hey, this works. And from that, moved on to marble, which is way more fun and much more durable, has much more richness to it. So that's a bit of the background there.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, some of your pieces, you mix the marble and the stone with other materials. Some of the stuff you were showing at the Imago event, you had one, I think it was called Healing, where you use glass as part of this as well. Have you always moved towards mixing mediums as well?
Yeah, I really enjoy the intersections where different media dialogue together and how they relate, essentially. Glass is a medium that I actually work with quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the fragility of it, in contrast to the stone, the weight of the stone, it's a fantastic just juxtaposition.
Now, looking at stone and looking at pieces of marble, can you sort of walk us through the process of working with something like that? Like, how do you choose the material and the form that it's going to take? Sort of walk us through what you go through when you're starting a sculpture.
Yeah, well, that's good. I think essentially not every design starts out where you know it's going to be a full-blown sculpture. Most of this stuff comes out of my prayer closet. So it's like we go in there It's a language, right? It's just another language, like English. So most of the time I use English. But when it's not enough, you turn to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where my visual journal comes out, the sketchbook, the pencil. You have to start with that. There's reams and reams of drawings that don't go past the covers of those sketchbooks. So you have to sense when one of those drawings has something electric about it that needs to grow beyond the book. And then once you figure that out and you say, hey, something's really going on here, this is not done, then you gotta, you know, discern, well, what is it going to be next? What's the next stage of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Supposing it's actually going to turn into stone, then you move on to a model or a maquette. Oftentimes out of clay, it's just handy and easy to work with. And that would be proportionately built in 3D. So once that's done, and then you've chosen your stone, some big block, you know, a couple hundred pounds or whatever, and it's the right size, then you draw on the rudimentary lines of the outer shapes as best as you can possibly measure. And then you pick up the concrete saw and start making some noise. And this is pretty rough work at this point. You're just taking out the large chunks. That happens in slices, and then you bang off the slices with a mallet and point chisel. Once you've done everything you can do with the concrete saw, you go to like a smaller circular wet saw, which is typical of what you'd use for making for cutting tiles,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. So a lot of time spent with one of those little tile saws, just the same idea though, slicing out sections and picking them off with a mallet and chisel. And then after that, you're using an air chisel, which would be a claw chisel for most of the rest of the working out the really rough bits that are left. Once you've done everything with that, then you're doing, you know, you're going through a series of other chisels with the air hammer there. And then grinding, endless amounts of grinding, just until the shapes are smooth, a bush hammer in there too somewhere. And finally, the very tedious process of polishing.
It sounds like there's a lot of physicality involved in something like this. Are you physically tired once you finish doing sculpture?
Yeah.
Is there anything you do specifically? I talked to a violin player earlier, and he was saying how he has a workout that he goes through to help him with the physicality of a performing violin. Do you do anything to keep yourself in shape to do the sculpture?
Yeah, I got a little routine that I do. But, you know, the drag of this kind of work is that you always start with the hardest stuff. You know, when I talk about the concrete saw, that's the beginning of the project still, and that's the heaviest tool. So at the end of the day of using a concrete saw for, I don't know, a whole pile of hours, I'm wiped. But it's at the end of the project, when all you're sitting there doing is polishing, that it's easy. So it would be much kinder to me physically if you could, you know, work your way into it, but it just doesn't do that.
Right. What is it about stone that keeps you coming back to that?
It's hard. It's durable. It's got a lot of fascinating colors and just there's beauty inside of it that needs to just, it. Somebody's got to carve this stuff.
Right.
It's fantastic. And there's a lot of variety
mm-hmm.
there.
I can sense you're smiling as you're saying that. There seemed to be this pleasure coming through about how much you enjoy working with this type of medium.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What I want to do is I want to take a quick break and continue our conversation with sculptor and visual artist Heidi Brannon. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Arts Connection, and you've been listening to A Full Heart from Jay Calder's CD, Breakfast with Barnabas. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Heidi Brannon. Heidi, earlier you were talking about, you know, the inspiration for some of this, the works that you do, comes out of your prayer closet, and I'm assuming that there's been a faith journey that you've taken as you've developed in that. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that faith journey?
Well, that's a broad question, Robert. You know, I said earlier that essentially this kind of work as an artist is just another language. So I use it as a form of prayer. I use it as a form of worship. It's just an extension of how I communicate. It essentially is just a tool of communication. So if I use it to communicate with my Creator, and I'm honest in that place, and there's a rich experience in that place, in that relationship of intimacy, then inadvertently, somehow at some point, that will also communicate to others around me. I'm not sure, you know, where you want to go with that question. There's been struggles in my life, and I would say that a lot of the pieces that I've created have come out the other side, like they've been part of the struggle. I've used the medium of stone and glass to process the stuff of my life, and so they become like landmarks and indications of just where I was at, and signposts to freedom.
I find that true of a lot of artists, whether they're musicians, painters, sculptors, actors, writers, that often they use their art either to work through things that they're going through, or later on reflecting back on the journeys that they've gone through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Looking at all of this, and you're talking about this, I guess the question comes down is, do you describe yourself as a Christian artist or an artist who is a Christian?
Oh, well, that's a funny question. You know, regardless of what I choose to do with my belief system, I am wired to be an artist. And I think I've been set up as well to discover God and to know Him. So essentially, I am an artist and I have a relationship with God. But I wouldn't say I'm a Christian artist, because that carries baggage with it that I'm not really comfortable with.
And that's why I was making that distinction, because there are people that and one of the things we found with people who and with the whole term Christian art often makes a representation of art that's less is more inferior than someone who focuses on their craft and someone who focuses on creating art.
Yeah.
Whether there's an intrinsic indication of it being Christian or not.
Absolutely. It's unfortunate, but
yeah. Is that something you've had to work through as an artist?
Well, I think right from early on, I decided to not make it blatantly obvious what my beliefs were through my art. It wasn't something I wanted. I wasn't interested in propaganda. I wasn't interested in going there. So it just, to me, I had to discover what was honest and pursue that. And for me, that just became a different type of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody noticed something in there that was life-giving and, you know, fed them some piece of hope for their day, that's great. And if they saw something completely different, well, hey, you know, that's their lens that they're looking through.
Mm-hmm.
But my approach was a bit more subtle.
Right. Well, one of the things you talked about when we were at this Imago event earlier this month, you described yourself as bringing order to chaos. What did you mean by that in terms of your art?
Well, I think it was around a dozen years ago or so, I discovered kaleidoscopes and just how fun they are. And being as I like to take things apart and put them back together and figure stuff like that out, I started playing. And so the simplicity of the construction of an ordinary kaleidoscope fascinated me, and it started to creep into my sculpture. And as it was doing that, I discovered a bit of a metaphor that really fit. When you have a three-part mirror system, which most of them have inside. Sometimes they have other arrangements, but most of them that work best have three parts of a mirror inside the barrel. Then you could put absolutely anything in front of that, any chaotic mess of a jumble of items, and then point it at a light source and look through the eyepiece, and you have just a brilliant image that originally, if you look from the outside, doesn't look like much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when you, you know, line those things up with the help of light, it just becomes completely fascinating. And yeah, chaos turns into something, an order that I can't come up with on my own. So that that idea just lit up in me. And I made the observation that, yeah, I have a habit in my life of trying to bring order to things, situations that are just kind of crazy. So that's where I took off with that one.
Mm-hmm. When you're looking, does that apply to some of the other things you've done as well in terms of some of the other sculptures, as well as the kaleidoscope ones?
How do you mean?
In terms of bringing order to chaos, order from chaos.
Well, I guess you'd have to ask, what does order look like? We have really preconceived ideas of what that can look like, and I think, you know, I really enjoy the game, essentially, of pattern recognition, but my mind is pretty small, so I'm an ordinary woman, and, you know, God's got such incredible ideas. His ways are so much bigger that I can't really recognize pattern and order like he can. So what that means is that essentially, I think, as far as bringing order into something, I think I'm bringing the some personality to something as best I can. I'm bringing hopefully a piece of the presence of God through who I am into a situation, into a medium, into some kind of creative dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
That makes any sense.
Well, looking at our time, it looks like our time is up, but I'm just wondering if listeners are wanting to find out a little bit more about your works and the type of things you do, where can they get that?
Yeah, I recommend looking at my site. That mm-hmm. would be www.etherworks.net. Etherworks, etherworks.net.
And that'll give you some idea. There's a gallery there that shows Heidi's work, as well as some shots of her actually doing the work. And you'll get a chance to understand what she was talking about, to talk about the concrete saw and things like that. Heidi, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you, Robert.
For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.